The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios in today's edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Great to be with you. Shaka Hislop going to join us in just a little bit with his power rankings. Plus, we take our first look ahead to Saturday's Clásico between Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. But we start the show in England, where the seat is getting increasingly warm under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The Daily Star going with Poch and wait. Could Mauricio Pochettino be waiting in the wings to take over? The Mirror a little bit more direct. Running out of time. For more, we welcome in Julian Laurent, Steve Nichol, and Don Hutchison. Jules, I'll start with you because it depends which newspaper you're reading. Some say the board is all with Ole. Some say they've already reached out and made the call to Pochettino. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that there's been no call to Pochettino. I mean, I don't think they need to call him anyway. They know that he's ready, he's waiting, and if they were to sack Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, they could go to him, and I think this deal could be done very quickly. He knows as well that he doesn't need to speak to United. He knows he's on the short list if Solskjaer is sacked. So again, I don't think they need to call each other right now anyway. But the fact is for sure that the pressure is getting more intense on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. There's a huge game at Everton on Saturday. I think Ed Woodward and people at the club still have some faith with him because of that sort of yo-yo performances, if you want, sometimes great, sometimes so disappointing, and he still has a bit of credit in the bank. But you just can't make too many bad games like the one we saw on Wednesday night in Turkey.
Jules, we've heard these rumors for a long time. How close is he? If he doesn't get the job done against Everton on the weekend, is that it?
So, I mean, international break is always a great timing anyway if you want to get rid of a manager, because that gives you a bit more time to appoint someone else before you play next, whether that's in Europe or domestically. You know, if you do it when it's not the international break, you play 3 days later. It's a bit more messy. So it's always the best time to do it if you're going to do it. I still think that even if they lose on Saturday, he will have a bit more time. I really don't believe that Ed Woodward right now is ready to sack him and to start another project with another manager, Poch or someone else. I think they will give him more time. And he has this ability, incredible ability, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, to put out a great performance tactically or with his player at a key time. We saw that in the past where the boat has been rocking already and then they have a positive run of results, for example, positive performance, and then all of that is forgotten again until the next time, the next disaster, because he had many disasters as well. So even with a counter performance on Saturday, we still be in the job.
Don, we've seen time and time again Manchester United pull out a result against a good team. What about against the poor teams? Does this group have enough to get it done?
I don't think they do. I mean, look at the results that they've had at home, especially Crystal Palace beat them. You know, when they played Brighton, I mean, Brighton hit the woodwork five times. So you worry what United's style is. That's the thing, Sebi. When you try and identify what Ollie's done in his first 100 games, I've got no idea what his style is. It's counter-attacking football, but I don't think you can get by solely, you know, winning titles and dominating in Europe on counter-attacking football. I think you can get results for sure, but I think the very best teams, I think they dominate the ball. And I'm struggling at the moment to try and find an identity of what Ollie's trying to do. I think it's counter-attacking football, and I think they're great when they play that way, but they can't do that every single week.
Jules, from your perspective, what's holding Manchester United back, players or manager?
I think it's both. Eventually, sometimes Ole got his tactics right and the game plan right. We saw it against PSG. We saw it against Leipzig this season. Very often, the game plan is right when they can just play on the counter-attack and they leave the ball to the opposition. They struggle far more against team who beat them at their own game, who beat them on the counter-attack. We saw that with Spurs. We saw that with Crystal Palace. We saw that, in a way, with Başakşehir on Wednesday night. I think the players are partly to blame as well, because it's not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Well, it could be Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for that first goal against Başakşehir, but the players on the pitch have to take responsibility for a goal like this, which is an embarrassment. It's an absolutely shameful, disgraceful goal to concede when you're any team in the world. I don't care about your level, where you play, the age group. It's an embarrassment. And Solskjaer, I believe, like every other coach, and Stevie, correct me if I'm wrong, work on set pieces, attacking set pieces, defensive set pieces, corners, wide free kicks, are training all the time. You have a position where you should be, and if you're not there, there's something wrong, either by you or your manager who told you what the plan was on set pieces. And yet, Matic, Maguire, whoever you want, on that pitch at Başakşehir, made a huge mistake by allowing Dembaba to be where he was on his own and score that goal. And that's not Solskjaer. So I think it's both are to blame, players, manager, and also, as we've been saying as well for many months now, Ed Woodward for poor planning, poor everything.
Listen, I can assure you, when I was coaching and we got a corner or a free kick or a set piece, the first thing I was looking at was how were we set up behind the ball? And I'm the coach. So what is the coach looking at in this game? And I'm not doing this because I made it up. I was brought up at Liverpool to do the same. When I'm sat on the bench as a kid, I'm listening to Ronnie Moran and the coaching staff, and it was the first thing they did. What's going on behind the ball if this thing breaks down? So I would love to know what all the coach... And listen, how many coaches have they got? Five? And you're telling me not one of them could spot that there was nobody back? I mean, my goodness, you talk about dereliction of duty. There's absolutely, and Jules is right, there's no excuse for any player to do that. And Harry Maguire's supposed to be the captain, and the fact that he doesn't do it is ridiculous. But five coaches sat on the sideline, and not one of them says anything. Wow, I couldn't believe it. It's so basic,
Seb, it's so basic. When you play it at any sort of level, and then you get into your teens and you start playing professional level, the golden rule is, and it will never, ever change, if a team leaves one up front, you have two at the back. If a team leaves two up front, you have three at the back. There's different ways of doing it. If Dembaba is standing close to the halfway line, you have a defender behind him and you have a holding midfield player in front, so one behind, one in front. It's just managers tell you this before a game. There's a flip chart before the game and the managers flip a chart over and they give you all of the instructions. And when you see the goal back again, all United's defenders are in the opposition 18-yard box. I think it's Nemanja Matic, who's the deepest player. And then the goalkeeper, Henderson, can see the whole picture. He's not saying anything neither. It was a ridiculous goal.
Don, on yesterday's show, Xhaka brings up what I think is a pretty valid point. He says Manchester United's players have not improved under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They might do so under a better manager. Let's say they were able to bring in Poch. How much better would he make this Manchester United team?
You still got the same individuals. You know, you still got players when I look at, and I look at people like Paul Pogba.
So the players aren't good enough then.
And they're not the only ones.
So the players aren't the ones that are good enough then.
Yeah, no, I think if Poch come in, I don't know why Poch is the name that always keeps getting linked with Man United when Max Allegri's sitting there out of work, who's one of the best managers of all time, and he never gets linked with the job, but Pochettino does, who's not won anything. But I think he would improve them, but I look at Ollie and I thought Ollie had improved a lot of the players. I really, really did. And then you go to about four or five players and you're not sure what performance they're going to bring. When I watch Anthony Martial, he doesn't seem like a hungry goal-getter. I know his numbers were terrific last season, but he's not an out-and-out centre-forward. Cavani's been brought in. All right, he needs to catch up on a little bit of game time. I thought he might play a little bit more. The signing of Donny van de Beek, I mean, he must be scratching his head thinking, what am I doing? Because I can only get 15 minutes here, half an hour here, 45 at the most. Paul Pogba is a player that I look at and I love him, but I criticise him so much because I think there's so much more he can do. So he's not consistent. And the list goes on. You know, Marcus Rashford's been sensational. Mason Greenwood, when he first came into the side, sensational. Any young player then has a dip. So you're looking at a really disjointed group of players that if someone can get them all together and all firing, I was one of them at the start of the season, Seb. Why I thought Man United would you know, try and push Man City and Liverpool this season. At the moment, they are way off.
By the time you get to play for Manchester United, People like Pogba and Fernandes and now Rashford and the goalkeeper De Gea and Maguire and all these guys, it's not about the coach improving them as players. It's about putting them in positions where they'll succeed. You know, do you think Pochettino coming in is going to make Paul Pogba a better player? No, what Pochettino will do is he'll put him in a spot where he can succeed and where he can be at his best. And he's a great example, Pogba, because right now, anytime he steps on the field, Ollie puts him in a spot where he can't succeed. Mm. Every time he plays him, he's asking him to defend. And he can't defend. Guess what happens? Gives penalties away, doesn't track back. Then everybody gets on his back. Instead of the Pogba we know at his best, driving forward and getting in towards the opposition's penalty box. So the coach has got to put players in a position where he can succeed. And Pogba's the best example of just putting a player in the wrong place.
Well, he's got three number 10s, hasn't he? He's got Donny van der Beek, he's got Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba all wanting to play, or all at their best, playing as a number 10 with a free role. And he can't get them all on the same side.
And Jules, that's just it, isn't it? When we talk about this team, you can talk about the players, you can talk about the manager, but you got to talk at some point about who's building it. This is a poorly built squad.
I mean, it's terrible. We've been saying it, I don't know how million times on the show, the last 7 years since Sir Alex Ferguson retired, since David Gill left the club. Ed Woodward, who was probably has some qualities and was great in the finance world, but this is not his job. He's out of his depth. He's incompetent. We've said it many times. He can't get half of a transfer window right. Even that he can't do. He can't do that, I'm sorry. And that's also the reason why this team is where it is now. That's why this team hasn't really moved forward in the last 7 years, because they haven't been built, the squad hasn't been built properly, cleverly, with a proper direction, with a name, with a target. If Ole Gunnar Solskjaer asks you Jadon Sancho, there's a reason to it. He's not asking you for Sancho because he thinks, you know what, I like his haircut. No, he's asking you for Sancho because he can bring you something different that you don't already have in your team. So pay the money. There's a price for everything. There's a price for Jadon Sancho. Pay it, because you didn't pay it. And now you look at this team and think, you know what, we could do with a Jadon Sancho there. Well, yeah, of course you could, and you should have bought him. And we can go on every single position in that starting 11, and we'll have the same conclusion. Yeah, you could do with that player that you didn't sign. You could do with him, but you didn't sign him. You could do with him, but you missed him out as well. And all of that is Ed Woodward's fault.
Hey, Jules, let's turn our attention to another manager on the hot seat in Group H, Thomas Tuchel. There's a chance PSG doesn't make it out of the group. If he doesn't make it out of the group, he's gone, no questions asked, yeah?
I think so. They won't say at the club, even off the record. But he had been really close to getting fired already, because the start of the season was terrible. You know, he lost the first two games in Ligue 1. If he had lost or not won the third one against Metz at the Parc des Princes, he would have been gone already. So I think if they don't make it out, even if they're still leading the league, that would be such a huge failure to not making it to the last 16 of the Champions League, the first time in the Qatari era, that I think it would be gone. Let's not forget that he's not Leonardo's man. He was appointed before Leonardo came back as a sporting director. You know how important the relationship between a manager and a sporting director is. And if you haven't been picked by your sporting director, I think potentially there's a problem down the line, and I think that's exactly what will happen. Thomas Tuchel has made too many mistakes. Yes, he got that team to the Champions League final for the first time in the history, but it's not enough. You can't always rest on what happened last year or the year before or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. The present is the most important now. It's not useful for anyone that you reached the Champions League final last year. It doesn't count anymore. What counts is what's happening now, and what's happening now is not pretty for Thomas Tuchel.
Don, worth noting, PSG without Neymar, Mbappe, Icardi, all that said, do you believe Tuchel's the man to turn this around?
Not at the moment. I commentated on the game against Leipzig, and he got outsmarted by Julian Nagelsmann, who went with an extra man in midfield. He had two false nines in Dani Olmo and Emil Forsberg up front, and PSG were poor on the night. I mean, we've mentioned, no Mbappe, no Icardi, no Neymar. I think the big one that's missing is Verratti in midfield. When I look at PSG's midfield, they've got combative midfield players, but they don't get service to the front men. The only man that I thought was outstanding for PSG was Di Maria. I thought he ran from minute one to 90. I thought he put a real shift in. He was demanding the ball. He was trying his best, but he didn't have the numbers. and the quality around him. And now, Thomas Tuchel, you know, 100% I agree with the boys. I think if he doesn't make it out of the group, I think he's gone. I think he's a manager that's in trouble at the moment.
Jules, if Tuchel does go, where would PSG look? And could it be Pochettino himself?
Of course he could. I think he should, more than Max Allegri. I think Leonardo, right now, probably has a little preference for Max Allegri. They know, they've known each other for years. I think they see football in a very similar way. Pochettino is a former PSG captain, obviously. He played and was really good when he was there. Loved the club, loved the city, the fans love him. They loved him back then, they still love him now. So I think he ticks a lot of the boxes as well. But eventually, Thomas Tuchel was appointed by Doha. It's the Emir of Qatar who chose him, not the sporting director at the time. I think this time, very much so, Leonardo is in charge. He will have, I think, the last call to do on who would come next as a manager. And I've got a feeling, and speaking to a few people, that Allegri is slightly ahead of Pochettino in the pecking order, if it's only down to what Leonardo thinks. And you could understand, as we said before, sporting director wants the best relationship they could have with their manager. Allegri and Leonardo will get on great, and that's could make the difference between Pochettino and Allegri, I think.
Since we mentioned Julian Nagelsmann just a little bit earlier, I'm interested to get you guys' perspective on some quotes he had about Upamecano after the match against PSG. Critical is probably too harsh, but he pointed to mistakes and mistakes that keep repeating themselves. Don, a couple months ago, this was, you know, the hottest defensive prospect in the world. Is he still for you?
Yeah, he's still. I mean, he didn't have a good game against Leipzig. I mean, for the first goal, Willy Orban, the left-sided centre-half, gave him a terrible ball with players wrapped around him. And he didn't have the feet to try and wriggle out of a situation, but how many defenders do? I still think he's an outstanding player. As we mentioned, with young players, they always have a little bit of a dip. But I still think the qualities that he's got, he's physically immense. He's great with the ball at his feet. He loves to play a forward pass. And I think that's what Julian Nagelsmann was getting at. He said he's too eager, because that's how he's learnt coming through the ranks. He's learnt to play, you know, fast football. He tries to get the ball from back to front very quickly, and he's great when he's running and taking players on from that sort of position that he plays in as a centre-half. But I think what Julian Nagelsmann's getting at is he needs to be a little bit more patient, I guess, and keep hold of the ball and know when to take the sting out of the game and keep possession and take the tempo down. Well, that's not easy when you're a young player.
Stevie, you were real high on Upamecano maybe just a couple months ago. Are you worried now or just growing pains?
You're kidding. Worried about what? In a shock move, a young player makes mistakes. Wow, that's never happened before, is it? I mean, come on. Listen, the guy's fantastic. He's got every attribute that you need to be a fantastic or even world-class centre-back. And because he's going through a bad spell, that doesn't just disappear overnight. It happens to every single player. I don't like that Nagelsmann's talking about him in the press in a negative way. Listen, if you're going to talk about a player in the press, the only thing you should be saying is nice things, not negative stuff. So, listen, Upamecano, he's 22 years old. The two best centre-backs in recent years in the Premier League, Virgil van Dijk and Vincent Kompany, were exactly or pretty much in the same position as this guy is now. In fact, Upamecano's probably playing at a higher level now than the two of them were when they were 22 years of age. And look how it turned out for them. So, no, Upamecano has absolutely everything to be world-class. And because he's gone through a bad spell, big wow and a shock move, as I said, young players having a hard time.
Jules, what do we make of the fact that he was left off the recent France call-up?
We can't make anything out of that. The depth at centre-backs for Didier Deschamps and the French national team is just out of this world. I mean, there's no other national team that has so many players that could be in that, you know, in the senior squads as centre-backs. And if you look at the under-21 squads and the centre-backs, it's Wesley Fofana, who is right now Leicester's best defender, it's Dayot Upamecano, it's Jules Koundé, who's probably La Liga's best defender with Sergio Ramos this season and last season as well. And you've got Konate from Leipzig, who just coming back from a long injury, who could make it. He's not in that squad, but it's incredible. So you can't make too much. Deschamps called him, he gave him his first caps. He was a bit shaky for his first cap, for his debut for France, which is normal, but he will be back. There's no doubt he will be back at some point. The only thing about Nagelsmann that makes me laugh is that this is what Nagelsmann asks him to do every game. Play forward, go quick, verticality, always. Find your midfield, find your forward all the time. And now he makes a mistake and Nagelsmann is like, oh yeah, he makes mistakes. This is what you're asking him to do. This is what you want him to do. I guarantee you that if he would not play that verticality, Nagelsmann would say, well, he's playing backwards too much. I want him to play forward. So it's always going to happen. Like Stevie said, he's young, he will learn. He gave a good interview in L'Equipe on Wednesday saying like, I know I make mistakes sometimes, I'm working on it. And he also said, I'm talking a lot to the manager about it, by the way. And then Nagelsmann go and does that. I didn't think it was very classy.
Guys, great stuff. Plenty more from Jules on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Boys are all over all the Champions League action from the past week.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a perfect time for the first Clásico of the season. Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund tied atop the Bundesliga 6 matches into the campaign. They've won 5 of their first 6. And it'll be Dortmund and Bayern from Dortmund Saturday, 12:30 Eastern time on ESPN+. We're joined now by the two guys who will be bringing you the action live, Derek Ray, Taylor Twellman. Guys, great to have you with us. Derek, I'll start with you. Let's start big picture. Talk about this series, because when we talk Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, we're talking in theory about the two best teams in Germany. But if I look at recent results, Munich has dominated, not just wins, losses. I'm looking at a 4-0 from last year, a 5-0 from last year. As we approach this game, where do you see the gap between Bayern Munich and Dortmund?
Well, there have been several thrashings in recent years, Seb, handed out by Bayern at Dortmund's expense, but mostly at the Allianz Arena, not so much at the Signal Iduna Park. And it remains to be seen what the dynamic is with no fans in attendance at this particular Clásico. Now, I think we should talk about the fixture and give it the importance that it deserves. But remember, if you were to go back 30 years, this wasn't the biggest fixture in Germany. It's a very recent thing, but it is fair to say that it has become the most important game on the German calendar. It won't be decisive. It will be direction pointing in terms of the rest of the campaign. And what I look at when I analyze Bayern and Dortmund so far is two very different approaches. Bayern have done it by sweeping the opposition aside, burying them beneath an avalanche of goals, not worrying so much about the defensive side of things. Borussia Dortmund, on the other hand, very tight defensively, with the exception of that one mishap in Augsburg, and taking their time, weighing up the opposition, breaking them down, and in every case but one, that match in Augsburg, getting 3 points. So a slight contrast in approaches.
Taylor, Derek describes two pretty different teams. What kind of game do you expect Saturday?
Well, you naturally expect a ton of goals, right? And yet, when you look at Borussia Dortmund at the early start of this campaign, they've been very good defensively. Now, whether or not that continues against the likes of Bayern Munich, I think that determines ultimately if they can defeat Bayern Munich. Now, in saying that, I think Bayern Munich's a little bit more vulnerable than they were after the global pandemic pause. Since coming back, they've had some injuries on the back line. Obviously, they've got some contractual issues with some of their defenders and David Alaba, as they've just now rescinded their contract offer over the last 24 to 48 hours. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of Bayern Munich team you get. But they come flying at you in all different ways, Seb, and they can score goals. If they need to win the game 5-3, they're going to win the game 5-3. They don't care about that. I just wonder if Borussia Dortmund, if they defend well and that's collectively, and catch Bayern Munich on the counter, I wouldn't be shocked if Dortmund wins this game.
It would be a huge boost for Lucien Favre. You look at his resume with Dortmund, just the one trophy, last year's Super Cup. How much pressure is Lucien Favre under, Derek, as we head into this match?
He's certainly being watched, and I think that goes with the territory when you're the coach of Borussia Dortmund and you're always trying to catch Bayern, the best team in Europe, and can you do it? You mentioned that Super Cup game. I was in attendance for that match, and there was a real sense of optimism flowing through Borussia Dortmund at the beginning of last season. The feeling was that Bayern were then vulnerable, and of course, we know what happened. Niko Kovac lost his job, Hansi Flick was promoted from within the coaching staff, and Bayern went on to win the treble. So I think Lucien Favre knows that he is under pressure. He's under scrutiny. One more year left on his contract. And do Borussia Dortmund see him as the man for the long haul? If it's another season without silverware, then in all likelihood, he probably isn't. But I do have to give him credit. I think this season they have played good football. As I mentioned earlier, an accident against Augsburg, a disappointing performance against Lazio in the Champions League. Otherwise, they've been really good. And I mean with the ball and also without the ball. And that's something we didn't always say about Borussia Dortmund in the past. That softness that we sometimes associate with them has gone. And really, when you look at middle to front, they're maybe not quite Bayern standard. Nobody is. But they have so many options and so many interchangeable parts. So I think that Lucien Favre is very much part of the story here, and let's see if he can get some sort of result. If it goes the wrong way for him, if it goes really badly for Borussia Dortmund on the day, then the questions will only be greater.
Taylor, one of the big questions facing Lucien Favre almost every week, every time he rolls out an 11, is what to do with Gio Reyna. Start him, bring him off the bench. What kind of role do you see for Reyna on Saturday?
Well, it all depends on where Giovanni Reyna's fitness is after the Champions League midweek, right? And we've seen him come off the bench at times. And I wonder, in a game of this magnitude after the Champions League game this midweek, maybe that is the role. We don't know yet. I've actually reached out to him, and they're going through that kind of training and regrouping after that Champions League game right now. So he actually doesn't even know what that role is. I will say this, though, and it's very interesting that Derek brings it up, is that softness of Dortmund. How many big games have they lacked the real nuance to the game where maybe it's not the prettiest of styles, but it's effective? That's always been the one question mark around Dortmund, especially over the recent times, last 5-7 years or whatnot. And this one may be different. Because of the vulnerability of Bayern Munich, I think Dortmund kind of looks at it and says, you know what, we may have this. Now, in saying that, they also have an inexperienced squad at times in these big games, and whether or not that rears its head is another one. But Giovanni Reyna is a massive, massive part of what this team wants to do going forward, and especially if he starts from the beginning. I'd argue that Pavard's been one of the weaker players for Bayern Munich since the return. That gives Reyna a real opportunity to have an impact on this match.
Derek, I don't think anyone would accuse Bayern Munich of being soft, and yet there are some criticisms, I guess you could say, some worries about their depth, maybe their defense. What are the real concerns heading into this weekend for Hansi Flick? Because other than that Hoffenheim game, it's really hard to point to any football we've seen from Bayern with a critical eye.
Well, I go along fully with Taylor with regard to Benjamin Pavard, because he has not been playing well this season. We have seen lapses in concentration, really silly mental mistakes. You think back to that game against Hoffenheim when he was just terrible off his game. You think about being nutmegged by Doan of Bielefeld recently, and even as recently as the Salzburg game in midweek in the Champions League. You know, Bayern know that he is somebody who has not really stepped forward this season. Now, they signed Bounassar as somebody who can play there. I'm not ready to say that. I think he'll come in for Pavard for this game. But Pavard certainly is on notice that he has to up his game. And so somebody like Gio Reyna will be fully briefed on that and will try to take advantage of that. Taylor also mentioned David Alaba and that contractual situation. Alaba was in many respects the star man of the defence, one of the star men of the team last season. He has been a little bit disappointing. Again, tempering it, you know, it's not as though he's been terrible, but just one or two mistakes and one or two performances that haven't been 100% brilliant. Now, on the other hand, I do think Jerome Boateng, and a year or so ago, we didn't think we'd be seeing Jerome Boateng in Bayern colours at this particular time, but I do think that he really is back to his best. And I think Lucas Hernandez, who has taken his chance at left back with Alphonso Davies struggling for form and then picking up the injury, I think Hernandez is somebody who has walked through the door that was open for him. So Bayern do have all these interchangeable parts defensively as well. They have had mistakes. They've made mistakes. I think the one question is, we think of Bayern as this high-line team. Can you really play with a high line when you have a fellow like Erling Haaland being able to take full advantage of that high line with his ability just to race away from defenders? How many of his goals come that way? Quite a few. So watch for that.
Speaking of strikers, Taylor, you are the striker on this show. I know it's not the Daily Wager, but I'm going to give you a fake prop bet here because we got two of the best in the world that we're going to see on Saturday. Robert Lewandowski or Erling Haaland? Who scores more on Saturday in the Clásico?
I'm going to take Erling Haaland. And I think because Hansi Flick and Bayern Munich naturally want to play a high line. You just heard Derek describe it perfectly. And I just think it's a risk that you don't really want to take with Erling Haaland. He is extremely special with his movement off the ball. We can look at the physical profile of what he does. But as an out-and-out nine, he's extremely special running off the back shoulder, timing his runs, making sure he's onside. But go a little bit deeper than that, Seb. Erling Haaland may be Robert Lewandowski's replacement at Bayern Munich. Remember the animosity between these two clubs, all these players moving from Dortmund to Bayern Munich and at times back from Bayern Munich to Dortmund. But Bayern Munich was all over Erling Haaland, but they couldn't promise him time. That is why he did not sign with Bayern Munich. He wanted to go to Bayern Munich. His dad wanted him to go to Bayern Munich. So don't be shocked if this is the little foreshadowing of Erling Haaland ultimately replacing Robert Lewandowski.
Taylor, since you mentioned there the pipeline between the two clubs, Derek, I'll finish with you. A little bit of a housekeeping item. What's the latest on the status of Mats Hummels? Didn't play Champions League midweek, but a huge part of this Dortmund 11.
Yes, Borussia Dortmund are very hopeful that Mats Hummels will be in the side. And he is somebody who really has been terrific for them, not just as a pure defender, but as somebody who starts the build-up, has that eye for a pass, can do so many different things, and of course has started to be a bit of a goal machine for them as well. And that is a sign of the times with Borussia Dortmund too, that they are scoring from set pieces, something they weren't particularly good at last season. So Hummels is a leader. I think that since they've gone to the back four, they've been better. It's incredible, really. They had a back three for the best part of a year and had success with that, but they've switched to the four, even putting somebody like Axel Witsel in there in midweek out of necessity, and it still works for them. But yeah, Hummels will be one of the big keys to this game for Borussia Dortmund, not just in terms of closing the door, but as an attacking option too, given what he's done in recent games.
Derek, Taylor, thanks so much for the time. The boys will be on the call. Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich, Saturday. 12:30 Eastern time kickoff starts, but our coverage begins at noon Eastern time. Jürgen Klinsmann joining the crew in studio. Don't miss it on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Thursday, a busy one in the Europa League, checking in on Group H because that's where AC Milan saw their 24-match unbeaten streak across all competitions snapped in a 3-0 home defeat against Lille Celtic, also losing at home. Final score 4-1 there against Sparta Prague. For more, we welcome in Don and Stevie. They're back with us. Shaka Hislop joins the show for the first time. Shaka, great to have you here. It's Thursday. That means power rankings time. Now, I should note, the last time we had you here, you had Milan all the way up to number 2 in your power rankings. Surely there will be a price to pay for this defeat. Where are you dropping them?
Yeah, it's a hefty price.
Oh, they're gone.
Entirely. Can't be losing at home 3-0 to Lille. Yeah, I know. It's a tough week. Number 1, Bayern. There's no argument there. Liverpool have shown AC Milan the way to bounce back after their result against Villa. They've been just romping away. You beat Atalanta by 5. You deserve to be in a 2. Dortmund, 3. Ajax still hanging in at 4. Leicester at 5, Spurs at 6. I showed them a whole lot of love in keeping them in last week despite the loss to Antwerp. Rangers at 7. And I know, listen, you throw away a 2-goal lead against Benfica, but at the end of the day, you'll pick up a point away from home against a team that were number 3 just last week. Sassuolo in at 8. I wanted to show them some love for the good run of form that they've been in. They haven't lost since August. Sporting Club de Portugal in at number 9. They've only dropped 2 points all season, but they don't have any European football, nor does Sassuolo. And number 10, Benfica. Despite being down to 10 men, that's what you get for signing Nicolas Otamendi. They still managed to get a point against another team in the top 10 in Glasgow Rangers. There you go. Beyond argument.
Question. AC Milan have lost one game in about 24 games, and Leicester go in at number 5 when they've only won 2 Premier League games in their last 4.
But they've also won their last Europa League game, so they're undefeated in 4. You can't be just picking on the Premier League games of 3 weeks ago, Dom. You know that.
Well, who? All right, then.
So and this is a rolling. It's fluid. It's fluid.
Right.
The results of this week matter. Not the results of 24 ago.
If Leicester are unbeaten in 4, AC Milan have been unbeaten in like 24.
Yeah, it's the power rankings for this week, Dom.
I'm lost here.
AC Milan didn't play 24 games this week.
Well, what about Leipzig then? Where Leipzig? They beat Paris Saint-Germain.
They're out. They're out.
Doesn't count.
Last week. They didn't do enough to convince me this week.
So AC Milan get knocked down because they lost, but Leipzig get nothing for beating PSG. Fair enough. I get it now.
Yeah.
So you want me to put every team that's won in the power rankings? I can't put every team that's won this week.
I don't think you're Miles, is it?
Somehow AC Milan ahead of Sassuolo in the Serie A table, but behind them in Xhaka's power rankings. It'll all make sense somewhere down the road. Maybe that somewhere will be in today's edition of Extra Time, where we can really and truly drill down on all the rationale behind Xhaka's power rankings. The boys are back with us, taking your questions off social media. Don't miss it.
Good luck with that.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Plenty of action on Friday for you here on ESPN. Plus, starts in the championship, 1 p.m. Eastern time, Cardiff City and Bristol City. Then Josh Sargent, Werder Bremen against Cologne in the Bundesliga. That one starts at 2:30 p.m. Eastern time, Serie A in action as well. Sassuolo, boy, they've been off to a great start this season, facing off against Udinese. And then in the FA Cup, throw out the records when these two meet, Harrogate Town and Skelmersdale United. First round of the FA Cup, all that for you on Friday here on ESPN+. All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone who joined us right now. What you've been waiting for, a little extra time with Don Hutchison, Steve Nichol, and Shaka Hislop. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into today's edition of ESPN FC's Extra Time. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We got your questions straight off of Twitter, and we've got three guys here to answer them. Don Hutchison, Steve Nichol, Shaka Hislop. What a trio. What a moment. Great to have you with us. Don, first question for you on recent Everton form. Do you think they can beat a, not my words, shambolic Man United?
I mean, Everton's form has not been great. I mean, they've lost their last two, so they're not in exactly blistering form, but I think they'll take a little bit of confidence from the shambolic performance of Man United in Istanbul. They were horrendous and lost one of the worst goals I think I've ever seen at the very highest level. The good news, I think, for Everton, that James is going to be back, so full strength. I would fancy Everton at home.
Next question's for you too, Don. I don't know if people didn't want to ask Stevie or Shock any questions, but I'll forward it to them. Stevie, as a former player, when you see a team on a bad run and you play them next, maybe following up on our last question, is there a feeling of overconfidence?
No, the first thing you see is, oh, typical, we're going to lose. We're going to be the first team to get beat by this mob. That's generally your first impression. But then by the time you get to the game, obviously, you've sorted your tactics, you're all fired up for the game. And of course, if a team's on a bad run, you'd certainly rather play a team like that than a team that's absolutely flying. But no, initially, as soon as you finish the previous game, everybody just goes, oh no, I hope we're not a team that loses to this mob.
Stevie, I never would have pegged you as the pessimist on this panel. Shaka, what do you think? Do you see it the same way or were you optimistic?
No, I'm the optimist as far as TV answers go. Listen, I think you much prefer to play a team that's in the middle of a bad run than a team that's in the middle of a good run. If you see somebody losing, you think this is a good time to go there and you know, kind of keep the pressure on. You know, they're low in confidence. That's a million times better than playing somebody who's just won four in a row.
Don,
I said that, didn't I?
Yeah, hey, basically, you got around to it. You took the long and winding road.
You'd rather play a team that's struggling than a team that's flying. That's what I said. You want to listen?
You had a weird way of seeing it. No, you have a weird way of seeing it. That's
sorry. Sorry.
Don, you ever seen a coach criticizing their players, even when they just won the game, like Andrea Pirlo did, saying that his forward line was too egotistical? What did you make of it?
I've seen it before. I don't think it's anything new. I think coaches probably learn more when the team wins rather than they lose. So I think the top coaches tend to analyse the performance. Yes, the result's great, but I think that's a consequence of the performance. So I don't think anything that Pirlo done was brand new. I think coaches in our time have all done that as well. Probably not as harsh, because they take the win, but still, if you've played poorly and won a game, managers are not going to be happy.
Stevie, you ever get on anybody publicly after a win?
No, never. Never get on anybody publicly, ever.
Well, even
you don't
if you
do that,
rubbish.
If you've got something to say to one of your players, then you get them in the appropriate situation, face to face, and you tell them. You don't go putting all your dirty washing out in the media. No chance.
Stevie, last time you were on Extra Time, you said that Firmino should still be starting over Jota. Did his performance, Jota's performance against Atalanta, change your mind? Something tells me no.
It certainly closed the gap yet again. Listen, when Jota signed, there was no question he was coming here to be the backup, to give people a rest, all that kind of nonsense. But every time he steps on the field, he does something, he scores goals. He looks impressive, and every single time he does that, he's inching towards, in my opinion, particularly Firmino's job, because he's not scoring goals. So I don't expect him to start at the weekend, not centre-forward anyway. I expect Liverpool's famous front three to start, but it's getting very, very close between Firmino and Jota, no question.
Yeah, it sounds like you got Firmino kind of here, Jota kind of here, and where in that would you put Raul Jimenez? In that where would you?
What? What's he got to do with it?
Jimenez over Firmino.
What's wrong with Come on. To do it?
Man. I think that's gone over his head.
Yeah. We've missed him. That was a couple extra times ago.
What a daft question that is. Well, the rather it is.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Tailed off there, Steve. Stevie, as a former defender, do you think the main reason Chelsea's defense has been so much better is because they feel they have a competent goalie behind them? Let me read you some stats here, because that's what our producer wants us to do. Chelsea's last match before Mendy got there, the 3-3 against West Brom. That 8 games since, Mendy started 7, 6 clean sheets. The one game in there that he didn't start was a 3-3 against Southampton. Kepa, your starting goalie. How big of a difference has it made, Stevie?
Huge. Absolutely huge. It's not the only thing that's made a difference, but it's certainly way up as the most important one. And every time he has to make a save, I always think he's going to make it, Mendy. Of course, you add to that, no question, right now it's Silva, Zuma, Chilwell, and probably should be James all the time. It's pretty much been four of the five. Now and again, Azpilicueta's played. But they've kind of got settled down with the personnel. And as you started by asking about the goalkeeper, yes, you've got a goalkeeper who now looks as though he's going to save everything that's hit arm.
Shaq, I think we probably knew that Mendy would be an upgrade. Are you surprised at how much of an upgrade he's been?
I am, yes. Listen, I think Thiago Silva coming in equally huge. I felt Chelsea had talented defenders, but they needed a leader in that back line, and they found that in Thiago Silva. But Mendy coming in, you knew it was going to be an upgrade on Kepa. I honestly didn't think that things would gel so quickly between him and his back four. Things wouldn't gel as quickly as they have. And the numbers speak for themselves. You don't need to look any further than that, certainly as far as the goalkeeper is concerned.
All right, guys, time for a walk down memory lane. When was the first time the guys realized or were told they were good enough to be professional? Don, you remember that moment?
Oh, I do. I was just playing local football, and a scout, famous one, Pop Robson, who's a bit of a legend in the UK, he was scouting for Hartlepool at the time, and he asked me to go for a trial. I went for a trial, played against Sunderland, scored a couple of goals. I was a forklift driver, or an apprentice forklift driver at the time, earning approximately £100 a week. And they asked me to sign sort of professional forms for £27.50. Mm. And I took it. I just wanted the opportunity to sign, so I signed for Hartlepool. Best thing I ever done.
Shaka, you had an interesting path to professionalism. Do you remember the moment you said, I can make a living at this?
Well, I remember the moment somebody else said it could. I wasn't quite sure. So yeah, my path, as you all know, went to Howard University here in the US, and then went out to England. I was on trial at Reading, and nobody really said anything, but the trial kind of dragged on. And then the starting goalkeeper, a guy by the name of Steve Francis, had broken his finger a game before, but he played. And then all of a sudden we were away to West Brom. West Brom were top of second division, what is now League One. Ozzy Ardiles was the manager of West Brom at the time. And I'm sitting there in the team meeting before the game as usual. And Mark McGee, the Reading manager, names me in the starting lineup. I had no idea. I hadn't signed pro forms with Reading at the time. I was still officially a trialist. He didn't tell me he was even thinking about it. All of a sudden, we're about to play table-topping West Brom, and he names me in the starting lineup. And I had no idea what to do with myself at that point. We lost 3-0, but that was the least of my concerns that day.
Oh, details. Somebody else can remember.
What to do? Well, make a save. Make a save would have been a good place to start.
Yeah.
Stevie, you remember?
After the third one went in, he went, oh, I know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, he hadn't signed yet. It wasn't official.
Stevie, exactly. I signed my pro contract 2 days later. I signed my first pro contract for a whopping £400 a week 2 days later.
Wow.
Oh, I tell you what. You two are a pair of big time Charlies. 400 a week, and then Dawn on 27.
Whoa.
I was getting a tenner a week at United.
£27.50.
I was getting £10 and a wee brown envelope. They were like, ah, there you go, lad, £10. I thought it was like that, brilliant. And I had to go home and give my mum a fiver of it for my housekeeping.
Yep. How much expenses did you claim, though?
Well, actually, I used to ride Eleanor's moped back and forward for the hearse, and they all knew, so I couldn't really stitch my expenses up.
Oh, goodness.
We moped. 25 mile an hour down the road. Pitch black. On the way home to training, big lorries flying past me and missing me, like about that wide of me. I'm like, ah. Well, we light
in front.
With a helmet on. I've got a helmet on as well, and I've got a wee basket in the front of it. Put my boots in.
Do you have a bell? Do you have a bell, Stevie?
Oh, yeah. I definitely knew I was destined for the big time, going away home in a Honda moped, 40cc.
You've got to superimpose your face on Dumb and Dumber when he's on the bike.
It don't get any bigger than that.
I just wonder if Stevie was holding the phone while he was driving the bike. Shaka, if you weren't a goalkeeper, what position would you play?
As a striker. Goalkeeper is actually my second position, Sebastian.
Wow.
I was born as a striker. Yes.
I was.
That's a boring answer. Stevie, what position would Shaka have played if he wasn't a goalie?
Shaka?
Yeah. There's your answer.
I think he would have taken over that apprenticeship that Don had for driving the truck. I think that's what he would have done if he wasn't a goalie. Hey, Shaq, there's the keys to be forklift. Get on with it. See you later. I'm going to Halifax.
All right, Stevie.
I'll run you off the road in your moped.
I bet you would.
It'd have been faster.
Stevie, you ever tried to score an overhead kick goal in training or during a match? And how? I guess Shaka's laugh.
No. I didn't fancy breaking my neck. So no. Don't even remember.
Stevie hates
even messing around. Oh, I might have done it when I was about seven or eight.
I've never seen anybody in football who hates an overhead kick, but Stevie.
I don't hate overhead kick. I there are certain ways to do it. Some people know exactly what they're doing and actually position them to their body, jump the right height, the whole thing, time it correctly. And there's others who just actually fling a leg and have no idea what they're doing and somehow get away with it. That's the ones I don't like, Shaq.
Don, will you be able to sleep tonight with the visual of Stevie Nicol and the overhead kick bouncing through your head?
Yeah, that's not really Stevie's forte, is it? I mean, imagine Shaka's legs trying to do it. Imagine the limbs flying everywhere. Shaka goes. It was never my. It was never my forte.
Yeah, right.
I never fancied it.
Deep in that locker, Shaka. Deep in that locker. I'm sure. All right, boys.
I'm telling you, Sebby. I'm telling you.
Thank you very much. Great stuff from the guys.
If there's one man that could do it out the four of us, it's probably you, Sebby.
Wow! High praise.
Just going to ask him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was your forte, Seb?
It wasn't anything to do with football or soccer, so we could just leave it there. I don't need to set myself up for any more abuse here, and I know that that's what's coming if I answer that question honestly. So I'm not going to
do it. All
right, Stevie, Shaka, Don, thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow. Plenty more questions to deal with on Extra Time, plus lots more to get to on the show. Don't miss it.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.